Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, presents Hawaii's Tomorrow, a series of discussions about Hawaii's business future, led by experts in their respective fields. Today's contributing host is the man himself, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, the program manager for Kosi Island Earth, and your marine science gal filling in for Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, on this beautiful Wednesday, May 16th. Today we're going to be talking about all things marine with some special guests that I have dragged all the way from the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology on Coconut Island in Kaneohe Bay. We have two marine scientists here to discuss their work on both big and small marine species ranging from whales to fish, and we will get a chance to speak with the future face of marine science talking with two students who recently won the Student Presentation Award at this month's Marine Science Hawaiian Island Symposium. We will conclude the show with a look at the development of the Hanalei moon calendar and how a few people are working to bring traditional ways of knowledge into our daily lives. This is my first time doing this show, so bear with me, and I'll do my best to fill in for Jeff's shoes. So for those of you out there listening, you might be wondering what marine science has to do with your lives. Very few realize the importance of the research that's going on here in the Hawaiian Islands. First off, we have some of the most unique and remote marine ecosystems, with at least one quarter of our marine species being endemic, meaning found nowhere else on this planet. Not to mention, we have one of the world's largest marine protected areas, the Papahanao Mokuakea Marine National Monument, or the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. It is also a World Heritage Site for its both cultural and natural importance. Researchers have been studying these remote coral reefs for many, many years through a partnership with NOAA's Office of National Marine Sanctuaries. To give us an idea of what these marine systems are like, we are going to talk with two researchers today, Dr. Mark Lammers and Dr. Brian Bowen. First up is Dr. Bowen, who is a research professor who works with understanding patterns of marine biodiversity through genetic study of a wide variety of marine species. Welcome to the show, Dr. Bowen.
Aloha, Carly.
To begin, can you tell us a little bit about what it's like to explore these pristine reefs and the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands as a whole?
Well, no description would be complete without noting that there are months of preparation ahead of time. The people that explore there have to be highly trained divers, and we have a very strict dive officer at University of Hawaii. They also have to go through very stringent permitting process. They don't let just any bozo go up there. They have to be highly trained bozos. Once we get there, after the months of preparation, we're dropped into the water on the reefs, and we go out and we scuba dive down to the reefs, and they're magnificent. They're coral mansions. There's one reef in French Frigate Shoals we call Rapture Reef, and it really is. And when we go down there, I think half the time we're seeing something no human being's ever seen before. And so we're explorers as much as scientists.
It's amazing. So what exactly do you do when you're on these reefs?
Well, we do a variety of things. We look for marine debris. We look for coral diseases. We look for invasive species. And we do the genetics to look at the connectivity and see how close the Northwest Hawaiian Islands is to the main Hawaiian Islands. Are they exchanging fish? Are things moving back and forth? Because that's important for the management of both the Northwest and the main Hawaiian Islands.
And you explore deeper reefs as well. What makes these places special?
Well, when the Hawaiians got here 1,500 years ago, they didn't find a bunch of bare rocks. They found a lush paradise, both above and below the waterline. And what we've found is that the deeper reefs in the Hawaiian Islands contain a much higher proportion of endemic species, things that occur nowhere else on Earth. And the concerns about these reefs is, one, the deep reefs might be able to replenish shallow reefs if they are depleted, and two, they might be older, more stable communities, refuges.
In your time exploring these deep reefs, have you seen anything new? Have you discovered new species yourself, or have you seen anything really that's so memorable to you?
I haven't discovered new species myself. Others have. What I remember most vividly is the megafauna, the big sharks, the monk seals, the sea turtles. They're abundant up there, and they're curious. They've never seen a human being in many cases, so they'll swim over and say, "What's that big pink thing?"
And, Brian, we hear a lot about climate change in the news these days. What concerns should we have pertaining to these remote areas like the northwestern Hawaiian Islands with changing climate?
Well, the first thing we have to understand is we live on the high islands. The northwest Hawaiian Islands is the low islands. They're sandy. They're only a few feet above sea level. So if sea level rises, a lot of that habitat's going to disappear. Now, we know that corals can cope with changes in sea level because they've been around millions of years, and sea levels rise and fall, and the corals are still here. What is maybe a greater concern to us is the monk seals, because they need sandy beaches to lay out on, and those beaches might disappear. And the most critical problem is the beaches at French Frigate Shoals, which is where the Hanu nest, the green sea turtle. If those disappear, we might lose the Hanu.
And how does your research doing genetics play into all of this?
We basically do DNA fingerprinting on fish and corals and all sorts of creatures to see if the Northwest Hawaiian Islands might be able to replenish the depleted reefs, the overfished areas in the main Hawaiian Islands. And basically, we can take a DNA fingerprint from a fish on Kauai and say, aha, your mom was on Oahu. And when we assemble all that genetic data, what we're finding is mostly the movement of little eggs and larvae, the offspring of these organisms, is the movements to the northwest. That the northwest is probably not going to replenish the main Hawaiian Islands, and that means we have to manage these responsibly ourselves. We have to be careful in our own backyard.
And so what are the future plans for your research? Do you have any new work that's going to be going on?
Yes, in the future, we want to find, as I mentioned earlier, the Hawaiians came here and found a lush tropical paradise. But everything that's here had to come from somewhere else. And we're trying to find out what the gateways for biodiversity coming into Hawaii are. Do they come from the south, from Polynesia? Or do they come from the west, from Japan and the Philippines? That's the next line of investigation. What are the gateways of biodiversity into Hawaii?
And you've been doing this for quite some time. Do you ever get sick of it, or is it always an interesting experience for you?
It's always an interesting experience. I'll never get tired of this because you just never know what you're going to see when you jump in the water.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, Brian, for being here to talk with us today. I wanted to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and Hawaii's new COSI program, Island Earth. COSI stands for Centers for Ocean Sciences Education Excellence, and it's an NSF, or National Science Foundation, funded program. There are 14 centers across the United States, and Hawaii's new COSI center, Island Earth, is housed at the University of Hawaii. This center aims to connect marine science issues with both our visitor and local communities, and we can check out the COSI Island Earth at www.cosi-ie.net. Brian, thank you so much for coming to share your research with us. Next up, we will have Dr. Mark Lammers, who's going to be talking to us about an ecological acoustic recorder, something that records sound. So we will be coming right up after a quick traffic break.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
In town, we got an accident at Kapiolani and Cook Street. On the west side, got an accident on Fort Weaver Road in front of Child and Family Services. Inbound traffic at the Middle Street Merge is jammed at the merge, and the H1 continues very slowly to the downtown area and until you get past the Punahou exit. Going west, the H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct of Moanalua at Middle Street, normal to the windward side and Hawaii Kai.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dean Okimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opilioahu.com.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
Aloha! This is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. The solar industry has changed enormously in the last 3 years. So many companies have entered the market that one of the most asked questions I hear is, what makes your company different? Solar Services Hawaii has been serving Oahu and neighbor islands for more than 20 years. Solar Services was awarded the best inspection rate statewide from the Hot Water Rebate Program. We were number one. Solar Services is a local family company. We recognize the need for service with Aloha. I personally have given a class for the IRS. I've lectured many, including two luncheons with the National Association of Tax Preparers. Roof penetration and tax issues are my focus. For all solar products, meaning hot water, photovoltaic, pool and spa heating, solar pool pumps, solar attic fans, you name it. We specialize in photovoltaics and hot water, and of course a free estimate is available. Just call my phone, Jeff Davis the Solar Guy, at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You have a great day and aloha.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis. I'd like to acknowledge a couple of the Solar Guy sponsors, R&R Solar and Rolf Chris. Kona Red, the superfruit wellness beverage made with Hawaii's antioxidant-packed coffee fruits, Cully Judd at Inter-Island Solar Supply, and Federal Credit Union, home of 2.99% green loan. Now, back with us is Dr. Mark Lammers, assistant researcher at Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and a University of Hawaii graduate. Dr. Lammers is our sound guy who examines interactions between species on coral reef communities using long-term observation of sound with a device called an EAR, fitting name, ecological acoustic recorder. Scientists learn about the activities of marine mammals, fish, and other sound-producing marine life with this unique device. So tell us, Mark, how exactly does the EAR work?
So the EAR is what we call an autonomous recorder. Like you said, it stands for the Ecological Acoustic Recorder. It's basically a small computer in a watertight case that digitizes sounds in the environment. We've designed it so we can put it on the ocean floor and record for many months at a time. We use it to monitor ambient sounds in remote marine habitats all over the Pacific, and we even have some units with collaborators in the Atlantic and in the Mediterranean Sea.
So what is ambient sound exactly?
Well, ambient sound is all the sound that is being produced both biologically and through by things like the weather, you know, breaking waves, and also, of course, humans as well. So we're able to record pretty much, you know, everything that's out there that's being produced.
And once you have these sounds, what do you do with them? How do you know what's making that noise?
Well, that's the tricky part. Most people don't realize just how many species of fish, invertebrates, and marine mammals make sound because as humans, we don't really hear very well underwater. We lose about 30 decibels of hearing sensitivity when we go underwater. But coral reefs are especially full of sound, which make them perfect for using acoustics to study. Generally, we rely on either our own experience with the sounds that different species make, or we use libraries of sound compiled by other scientists. But there's no question that sometimes we have no idea what's making the sounds that we record.
So technically, you could just play those sounds for our listeners, and maybe they can take a stab or a guess at what's making that sound.
Absolutely.
Well, we might get to that a little bit later.
Sure.
So what is the most interesting sound or piece of information you've been able to gather from the ear?
Well, that's a little hard to say, because it seems like every time we recover one of our ears, we come across something new that we hadn't heard before. So every time we pull it up, it's actually very exciting. But probably one of the more interesting recent findings has been that humpback whales are actually quite common in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. This was not thought to be the case only a few years ago. Whales were believed to winter exclusively in the main Hawaiian Islands. But by listening for their song, we've been able to document the fact that not only are they present in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, their numbers appear to also be growing.
And, you know, there's been a lot of talk and concern about the ocean getting noisier. Given your research, how accurate is this? Is this something that we should be concerned about?
Yeah, well, noise pollution in the ocean is definitely becoming a problem. Because sound travels so well underwater, a lot of species rely on sound to communicate with each other. So as noise pollution from things like shipping, industrial activities, and seismic exploration increases, it's basically urbanizing our oceans. You know, it's kind of like building a freeway next to a quiet neighborhood. It essentially forces the inhabitants to either adapt to the noise or find a new place to live, and that's kind of what's going on in the ocean right now.
So where's the noisiest place you guys have picked up or recorded using the ear?
Well, probably the noisiest locations that we've been recording here in Hawaii has been along the South Shore, which, of course, you know, makes sense. That's where we have, you know, the most sort of the largest urban areas, and we have a lot of vessel traffic, both from, you know, fishermen and private craft, the tour boats, to a lot of the industrial activity, the tankers and so on. So recording off of Barber's Point has been probably the noisiest place that we recorded in Hawaii so far.
Interesting. Well, we should take some of these sounds and let our listeners take a guess at what some of them are.
Sure.
This first one that we have here, I don't know, should we give them a hint maybe?
Well, let's just say that it's been mentioned.
Okay, that seems like a pretty good hint. Let's see if we can play one sound for them. All right, well, I guess we gave a couple seconds to take a guess. Mark, you want to reveal what that sound was?
Well, that was the sound produced by humpback whales. So these are our annual visitors to the islands, and the males engage in an elaborate display of song, which is believed to be related to mating. And it's actually thought that it might be a display to other males rather than to females. So it's a sound that's very common in Hawaiian waters. Probably if you've been diving or snorkeling during, you know, February or March, you've probably heard it yourself.
And do the humpback whale sounds that you record in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands, do they sound different than the ones in the main Hawaiian Islands?
Well, that's actually a good question. We've had a student that's been looking at that, and she's been finding evidence that, yes, in fact, there seem to be some differences in the song, the way that it's structured in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands compared to the main Hawaiian Islands, which might suggest that those whales might be kind of a different breeding stock than the ones we get down here in the main Hawaiian Islands, which would mean that they probably have to be kind of managed a little bit differently than the ones that we get here.
So can you make any conclusions of where that stock is coming from? Or?
Well, a few years ago, there was it was a large collaborative study with a lot of different researchers all around the North Pacific to try to look at where whales from the North Pacific populations go both to feed and also to winter, to breed. And what they found was that there was a group of whales from the Bering Sea and the Aleutians that weren't showing up at any of the sort of traditional wintering areas. And we've been hypothesizing that the ones that we're hearing up in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands may be part of that stock up in the Aleutians that don't seem to be showing up anywhere else. So it's a hypothesis, and we're still trying to nail it down.
That's exciting. We've got mystery whales in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. Well, should we play one more sound
sure.
for the listeners? All right, let's go with this next one.
Thank you.
Okay, that one was totally weird. That is something I have never heard of before. I'm baffled. Where did this recording come from?
So this was actually a spaceship landing in the northwestern Juan Islands. No, I'm just kidding. No, this is actually, it's, although it sounds like some kind of a sci-fi sound, it's the sound produced by a bearded seal. Okay, and we don't have these in Hawaii. They're actually found in the Arctic. And it's produced by the male, kind of like the humpback male. Humpback whale also produces their sound during the mating season. So that's what bearded seals do. And it's thought to be some sort of a mating call to either attract females or possibly to kind of claim their territory and you know, warn off other males.
Well, if a male made that noise to me, I would stay away. Well, that is really interesting stuff. Those are amazing sounds. So do you have plans to continue recording sounds with the ears, or what's next for the ear?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, we have instruments deployed all over the Pacific, like I mentioned, and in many parts of the world. We have them up in Alaska recording beluga whales up in Cook Inlet, which are an endangered population. And so right now there's really no slowdown in sight in terms of the use of ears to record marine sounds. Sound in the ocean is becoming a very hot topic scientifically, and so we anticipate to be using the ear for many years to come.
Excellent. And are you still going to be deploying ears in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands?
Yes, we are. So this summer, there's a cruise heading up there, and we have ears that are presently there, so we'll be swapping those out, refurbishing those units, and then we're going to deploy some new units in deeper waters to listen for some sounds produced in some of the deeper waters than the coral reefs.
How tricky is it to retrieve those ears once they're in the water?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Obviously, the deeper ones, we can't dive to and pick them up. So what we have to do is we have to use what are known as acoustic releases. And they're coupled, they're tied to the ear. And so we send the unit overboard. And when we want to retrieve it a year later, we send an acoustic signal down there. And there's a little mechanism that releases it from its mooring. And the ear comes floating up to the surface. It's actually a very, very cool little process.
That sounds really neat. And, you know, while you're waiting for that ear to come up, I guess you're on the boat a lot. Do you get seasick ever?
No, I personally don't get seasick, but I've seen many people get seasick, and it's awful. So far, knock on wood, I've managed to escape that.
Just anticipation, waiting for the ear to pop up and see what sounds are out.
Yeah, that's nerve-wracking enough. Just, you know, once you invest all that time putting, and money, of course, putting the instrument in the water, and I have to say, sometimes, you know, they don't come up, unfortunately, and we don't exactly know why, but for the most part, we have a good record, and we get our instruments back.
And how long does it take to analyze those sounds?
It takes quite a long time. It's a labor-intensive process because we have to, you know, comb through the data and then try to identify what things are. So for, let's say, a year's worth of data, it'll take us a couple months, at least 2 to 3 months at least, to get through it. So.
Amazing. Well, you do some really amazing research. And I guess the old saying, if a tree falls in the woods and there's no one around to hear it, doesn't make a sound. If it's underwater and there's an ear, I guess can listen to it and record it.
Absolutely.
So I'd just like to take a few moments here to acknowledge some of the Solar Guy sponsors, D.R. Horton Schuler Homes, Solar Services Hawaii, and Hoku Solar. We're going to take a quick traffic break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
We've got an accident on Nimitz at Pacific Street, another one on the windward side, Kalani on Oli Highway at Aloha Road, and another one out on Fort Weaver Road near Child and Family Services. Going west, the Waialua Freeway backed up into Kalihi. The H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. You're going to be in heavy traffic until the Waimalu Pearl City exit. Inbound traffic from the west, slightly better. No jam at Middle Street, but the H1 eastbound does get slow in Kalihi.
Want to go green for your home or business? Hawaii Community Reinvestment Corporation introduces its new Green Sun Hawaii program, an innovative public-private partnership to make energy improvements affordable for everyone. Green Sun Hawaii gives you the power to significantly reduce your utility bill. Visit Hawaii National Bank or other participating lenders or one of the many authorized energy contractors for more information. Or visit greensunhawaii.com and click on the easy-to-use loan application.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to my dad, the solar guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. With me now, I have two of HIMB, or Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology's finest students, Jonathan Whitney and Nissa Silbiger, two marine science students, both at University of Hawaii. Now, Jonathan, I understand you recently won the Student Presentation Award at the 5th Hawaiian Islands Symposium for Marine Science. And Nissa, you were the runner-up. Congratulations, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So how does it feel to share a platform with such accomplished researchers?
It really was an honor to be up there with some of the most productive marine scientists in Hawaii. And it's even a better treat to actually be able to have the chance to share your own research with a large group of, you know, some of the biggest names that and most productive names that work in marine science in Hawaii.
Yeah, I have to agree with John. I'm extremely humbled and honored to be able to share a platform with all these great researchers.
Excellent. And you guys did a great job with your presentations, not just with the science, but also applying science to management, which is really important. Considering we do work both in the Maine and the Northwestern Hawaiian Islands. So if you guys were sitting in marine science or teaching a marine science class, how would you explain what you do?
So I study bioerosion on coral reefs, which is the natural breakdown of coral reefs by living organisms. Corals live within a very delicate accretion or coral growth and erosion balance. And in Hawaii, there's actually a very little known about how fast the reef is being naturally eroded. So because of this, I'm asking three main research questions. The first one is just what are the current bioerosion rates in Hawaii? And then I'm also interested in how different oceanographic processes affect these rates in the community of organisms that erode reefs. For example, how much does nutrient input or pH or water motion affect bioerosion? And lastly, will bioerosion be affected by global climate change caused by human-induced carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? Recently, there's been a lot of concern about how all the carbon dioxide being emitted into the atmosphere is affecting organisms and ecological processes in basically every ecosystem on the planet. The oceans are getting a double whammy because not only is carbon dioxide a greenhouse gas that is warming sea surface temperatures, but the ocean actually absorbs most of that carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and is causing the oceans to become more acidic. Corals, in particular, accrete a skeletal framework of calcium carbonate similar to human bones. And if the ocean becomes too acidic, then reefs will grow more slowly and eventually start to dissolve. Now, there's been a lot of great research showing that coral growth of many corals will slow with ocean acidification. However, we know almost nothing about how bioerosion will change with ocean acidification. So why should we care whether or not bioerosion will be affected? Well, in order for reefs to persist, the rate of erosion must be less than the rate of accretion or coral growth. We need to know how climate change and ocean acidification affect both sides of the equation in order to really understand how reefs will change with the future.
So basically what you're saying is corals are super picky animals and they just don't like changes to their environment. And basically you're looking at how those corals, how quickly they dissolve or erode, basically.
Well, yes. Corals have the ability to adapt to different environmental conditions, but if you change the environmental conditions too quickly, which is what's going on, that's when it becomes an issue. But yeah, I'm studying the other end, the erosion, or how the animals are taking away that calcium carbonate.
So basically people just need to stop driving their cars.
Yeah, that would help a lot.
And John, what about you?
Well, a little different, but I guess broadly speaking, I'm interested in trying to understand how new species are created in the oceans. Specifically, what are the patterns and processes that have caused the amazing diversity of marine species that we see? And more specifically, this my dissertation involves studying a really unique case of speciation in action. So it's basically evolution ongoing in a species of reef fish called the Arkeye hawkfish here in Hawaii that has the two different color varieties that are in the process of splitting into two species right now, right here in Hawaii. And so it's giving us an opportunity to look at the really very early stages of species splitting like this to see how it actually works. And for centuries, most biologists have believed that new species are only created when they get separated by a physical barrier, like on either side of a mountain range or of a continent, something like that. It's a physical isolation that allows them to go down different evolutionary paths. But what we're seeing in this case is that they don't have to be physically separated, that they can adapt to specific niches, even if they're right next to each other, and that their behavior can cause them to split even when they're on exactly the same reefs.
So if the species splits, would you redefine them or reclass them as new species? Or
absolutely, eventually. The fascinating part about this is that this is where we're at in the studying this fish, both genetically and ecologically, showing that this is what happens when it's just starting to split. So they may not be actual separate species for 1,000 years, but this is what those really early stages look like when it just starts, and that's a part of the process that we haven't seen before. And so it's allowing us to change the way we think about the process of evolution.
That's amazing. So you're getting to basically see the beginning of the story and how that works.
Exactly.
So for those of us that haven't seen an Arkeye hawkfish, can you describe what it looks like?
Yeah, they're really cool little guys. They're only about the size of a deck of cards, really small. They're all over the place in Hawaii, and they're really heavy bodied, so they sit on top of coral and lie in wait predators just waiting to dart out and pick off little shrimps and larval fish like that.
Very cool. So I hear, Nissa, you have some interesting and have had interesting interactions with some sharks and monk seals when you're out in the field doing your research. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you could say I've had quite a few rather interesting interactions with both monk seals and very large tiger sharks. For some reason, very large marine animals like to come hang out with me when I go diving. But all of these interactions happened while I was working in the Papahanaumokuakea Marine National Monument in the northwestern Hawaiian Islands. My first big interaction was when I was assisting another graduate student on my very first cruise, and my job was to count and identify fish off of 1800 and early 1900 shipwrecks. So we did this one dive at Midway Atoll on a World War II Corsair wreck, and this was sitting in a large sand patch in about 120 feet of water. But because the dive was so deep, we only had about 15 minutes or so of bottom time, and then we had to surface really, really slowly with a couple of stops on the way. The majority of the way that I was coming up, I was staring right at my dive computer to make sure I wasn't coming up too fast. And after about 60 feet or so, we slowed down and my dive buddies all started looking at each other kind of funny, but they weren't communicating with me. And I didn't really know what was going on. But then their eyes opened up really wide, so I decided to slowly turn around to see what all the fuss was about. And while inches from my head was a massive tiger shark. I mean, this thing was at least 11 to 12 feet long. She had cruised right up to my head and then turned around and started swimming away. So at first I said some things into my regulator that I can't say on the radio, of course, and then I took a picture for proof for everybody. But when we all made it back to the surface, we were all laughing and excited because none of us have ever seen a shark that big in the water in our lives.
Well, I think that's one of the most amazing things about the Papahānaumokuakea Marine National Monument. I mean, it's one of the last apex predator-dominated ecosystems, so when you jump in the water there, it doesn't look like the main Hawaiian Islands. I mean, there are still large fish, large sharks, huge schools of them, and that's what makes it so special.
Exactly. I think on almost every single dive up there, I saw some kind of shark or some large apex predator or an alua or a monk seal or a turtle. I mean, it's amazing. You never see that anywhere else.
It's fantastic. So, John, are you also doing deep dives and dodging sharks, or what do you do in a typical research day?
Most of my stuff is pretty shallow. So the fish that I study are in shallow coral reefs, mostly less than 30 feet, so a little bit different, and has taken place in the main Hawaiian Islands so far. So it's pretty much all scuba diving. On a good day, we'll do 3, maybe 4 dives, really pack them in, and so we do a bunch of ecological surveys, transects, looking for fish, counting fish, collecting specimens, measuring habitat, those kinds of things.
What for those of us that don't know, what is a transect, or what does that entail?
So we'll basically designate a specific part of the reef that we'll study in really high detail. So we'll lay down a meter tape that sections that off, and then count all the fish in that area, document a bunch of habitat variables for those really specific areas that we can relate to.
And you guys are doing such interesting research. I mean, when you were little, did you say, I want to grow up and study how arc-eye hawkfish is dividing? Or, I mean, what path did you take to get to where you are today?
Well, for me, I actually grew up in South Florida, not too far from the ocean, and I probably started snorkeling right about the same time that I could walk. But what really did it for me was back in fifth grade, we took a trip to Key Largo to a place called the Marine Lab, and we went snorkeling on the coral reefs and seagrass beds and mangroves, and we even did a late night plankton tow and got to go back and look under the microscope and see what was there. And I mean, basically, then was immediately when I was, this is what I want to do with my life.
I had a little bit different background. I grew up in New Jersey. Other than random trip to the Jersey Shore from now and then, I hadn't really been exposed to the amazing diversity of the ocean until I was about 19. I took a marine biology field course at Prescott College, the school that I did my undergrad in. And there, when you take a course like this, it's a semester long, they send you down to this field station in the Gulf of California in Mexico, which is right on the water. And there they basically expose you to, you know, anything and everything. So the first day on the boat, I was almost pretty much hooked. I saw tons of whales, dolphins, sea lions, snorkeled for the first time, was, you know, completely blown away at what I had seen, and pretty much got me curious to learn more about the ocean.
Yeah, excellent. So coming from different backgrounds and still being so accomplished, what advice do you both have for students that are interested in studying marine science, or for people that are just interested in exploring more?
Well, in Hawaii specifically, I would say most importantly, get into the ocean and learn as much as you can. It's never too early or too late to throw on a mask and just start exploring. Also, volunteer to help out with different scientists and projects, whether it's at a lab like the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology or at an aquarium or anywhere. Getting as much experience learning about different things as early as you can is the best advice I can give anyone wanting a career in marine science.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with Nyssa. Experience is the way to go, both in the lab and in the field, especially in the field. You know, most of the best scientists have started out as naturalists, where they're going out in nature, seeing what's out there, making observations, and, you know, becoming curious about how the natural world works. And I think those experiences you have of seeing nature, seeing the amazing things that are in the ocean, are what fuel your curiosity and will give you the inspiration you need to really delve into marine sciences.
So you hear that, parents? Get your kids out in the water. I know my parents did. Thanks, Mom and Dad. But thanks to both of you guys for being here today. Your work is both so exciting, and I'm really excited to see where you guys end up. I want to thank some of the Solar Guy sponsors, Blue Planet Foundation, Young Brothers, Green Sun Hawaii, and the Solar Training Institute. Up next, we will talk about a very cool project that's happening here in Hawaii, the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar.
Hawaii's Business Authority.
We've got a new accident reported on South King at the Chevron across from Market City. Also had one on North Nimitz at Pacific Street. Normal conditions to Hawaii Kai and to the windward side, but going west isn't normal. The H1 is stop and go on the airport viaduct, and the Moanalua is stop and go right after Middle Street. It's really backed up. Inbound traffic from the west side slows at Ola Lane, and then it's slow through the downtown area.
Aloha, Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy here. A breath of fresh air is what you need on your afternoon drive home, not the boring windbags. Can I say that? Tune in Monday through Friday. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m., 760 KGU. Aloha.
Hi, folks. Marco Mushkovich here from Hawaii Money Resource. Join me every weekday at 2 to learn how to nurture and protect your nest egg. Retire comfortably in Hawaii. Tune in to Hawaii Money Resource every day at 2, right here on 760 KGU.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha. It's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you a $100 call-up bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha!
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. For those of you that are just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner filling in for Jeff Davis. Acknowledging some of our Solar Guy sponsors, our great NELHA, Natural Energy Laboratory of Hawaii Authority, Sabrina's Italian Restaurant, Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods, and Hawaii Nanotech, trying to just give shout-outs to all our sponsors here today. Last but not least, I have with me today Brenda Asuncion, here to talk about the Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar that she and a bunch of other people recently put together for both Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument and the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary. First off, congratulations. The calendar is fantastic. It's amazing. I love the detail you guys put into it. Not only giving the tide and the moon phases, but the Hawaiian names, and also a lot of the place-based knowledge that's woven within the calendar. So tell me, what inspired you guys to create such a thing?
Thanks, Carly. We're so glad to hear that people really enjoy the calendar. We had a lot of fun making it. The idea actually came out of the Hanalei Watershed Hui, and that's a nonprofit organization that focuses on the marine environment in Hanalei Bay on the north shore of Kauai, and they also focus on activities in the watersheds that impact that bay. And so they had been wanting to make a product to provide to their communities in the area, and they also wanted to make it for visitors that come to the area because Hanalei is really an attraction destination place for Kauai. They really just needed support in actually making the calendar. So Hanalei Bay is located within the boundaries of the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary on the north shore of Kauai. So that's how I got involved in it. I helped with the planning and kind of the background research for the calendar. And that's also how Kanani Fraser got involved. She really did all of the layout and the background design for the calendar. And on the ground, since we're both on Oahu, Yumi Yasutake works with the Papahana Mokuakea Marine National Monument. He is the outreach programs coordinator on Kauai. So he's the guy on the ground doing the work on Kauai.
And so the calendar that you guys put together, it's so detailed. What type of research and planning went into the creation?
Well, we really wanted to make it a place-specific product, so it's really for the area around Hanalei Bay. We included a lot of background information on the area, names of landmarks, traditional names of winds and rains that are in the area, because it's really an amazing thing that our kupuna were so detailed in the way that they observed their environment. So winds could have different names just based on the way it felt, and they could also give indications of what good weather was like for fishing. So the calendar is also really awesome because it ties the moon phases into good times of the year or the month for fishing. And so we put that kind of background information in it. And then Yumi, since he's actually able to get in the water in Hanalei, he went out and collected fish and measured gonads to see if they were spawning or if they were not spawning. And that's kind of an indication of how to keep populations stable, because we want to encourage people to not be harvesting fish when they're ready to spawn.
And did you get to get in the water as well? Or?
No, I didn't, but I should probably convince him to get me over there so I can help. But he's the only guy doing that stuff on his own.
Wow.
So he did a great job, yeah.
Well, maybe for 2013, right?
Yeah. I'll put that plug in for him.
So how should people use the calendar? What do you want people to do with the calendar once they have it?
Well, just so people have an idea of what it's like, it's a standard size, like, 8.5 by 11 flip up kind of calendar. But we really want people to use it in their everyday lives. I actually carry one around with me in my bag. So we want people to be able to refer to it every day, be aware of their environment. It has a lot of cool information about just the conditions of the water, like it has the tides and then the sunrise and sunset times, the moonrise and moonset times. And so that's useful for people who are interested in fishing, but it's also just useful for the average beach goer. And then there's information in there about like certain species of fish. And so it's really just a great educational tool for people who are in the area to learn about their environment. And like Nissa said earlier, it's really great just for people to get in the water and learn how to observe and keep track of things in their own minds and in their lives.
It seems like it would be something that would be really useful for students to use and to get involved with and follow. Have you guys approached any of the schools about using the calendar?
Yeah, so Kanani and I haven't been doing it on Oahu, but because it's such a specific product for that area, Yumi has been going around to different schools, and he's been using the gonad analysis activity to teach about fish spawning and fish reproduction. So he's been describing it to us, and he sent us a couple of pictures. But it's cool because the fish can learn. I meant the students can learn about different parts of the fish, and then they can learn about how fish spawn seasonally, and then that gets them into the mindset of finding out when fish spawn, if it has to do anything with the moon, if it has to do anything with the season. And so just from an early age, it gets them thinking about how you don't want to be fishing when fish are spawning.
What have you taken from the calendar? Is there any new fish spawning information that you've learned from?
Well, I've learned from Yumi's fieldwork that manini in Hanalei Bay spawn pretty much from March to July. And that's another cool thing about this calendar, is that it really displays the spawning information for that area, because fish probably throughout the islands don't spawn on the same schedule. It has a lot to do with like the environmental conditions, whether they're in a protected area or whether they're in a place where they get a lot of exposure to different types of currents. And so what I've learned is about manini and Hanalei Bay, because I'm not from that area, so I didn't know that.
Well, and Hanalei Bay is obviously within the boundaries of the whale sanctuary, and a beautiful place. But why did you guys specifically focus on Hanalei? Why is regional knowledge so important?
Well, the idea for the calendar came out of Hanalei, that watershed hui. So that's pretty much why we started there, because there was the interest. A lot of research about the area has already been compiled in terms of like historical research and traditional knowledge. And so it was relatively easy for us to kind of get it into a product that could be accessible for other people. The neat thing about this project, or just the concept of it, is that it can be replicated in all kinds of areas. So really it was just kind of a thing that happened by chance that it started in Hanalei, because we had the capacity of Yumi being there to support it, and then also the support from the local organization that wanted to have it.
Well, that's amazing. Do you guys plan on doing another one in another location, or a new one for 2013?
Well, for 2013, we're definitely doing another one for Hanalei. We're going to incorporate different kinds of information. We're also going to make some revisions of things. We're trying to make it more user-friendly. We want to make it a little more accessible for people to use every day. And this project is really an example of how both the monument and the sanctuary can support communities throughout the islands, where there's interest and where organizations are interested in kind of gathering local place-based knowledge and using this product as like an educational talking point. So yeah, we definitely love to support other communities in learning more about their areas.
It is a fantastic calendar. Congratulations. So if people want to get a copy of it, where can we go?
All right. So I have a website link, and it can be downloaded as a PDF. So the start of the website is on the monument site. So it's papahanaumokuakea.gov. And that's a really long name. But if you Google Marine National Monument in Hawaii, it'll definitely pop up. And then from there, it's in the news section. And then you can go /Hanalei_calendar_2012. And people should be able to get to it that way.
Well, that's fantastic. I hope everybody uses it. It's really an amazing piece of work. So thanks so much for being here to talk with us about the calendar.
Thanks, Carly.
Well, today we've heard from both students and faculty at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, located on Coconut Island. For those of you out there that are interested in learning more or would like to see the island and our science facilities, we offer public tours. So Coconut Island is no longer a secret island. It is available to the public, very much so. We have great direction and leadership with Dr. Joanne Leong, and have so much research to share and knowledge with the community. So if you would like more information on how you can get out to Coconut Island, you can visit us online at www.hawaii.edu/HIMB and go to the education link. Once again, I would like to acknowledge Hawaii's new COSI program, Island Earth. With 14 centers across the United States, Hawaii's new Island Earth COSI Center aims to connect marine science issues with both visitor and local communities, with special emphasis on the integration of Western and traditional knowledge. So for more information on Hawaii's Island Earth program, you can visit us online at www.cosi-ie.net. We just gave you guys a lot of websites there. I would really like to give a special thank you to all our guests who took time out of their busy schedule to speak with us today. A big shout out to Jeff Davis for inviting me to host today's program. I got to meet Jeff at the Ocean Expo a few weeks ago, and he is one dynamic guy. And it was actually a very fantastic event. Ocean Expo was really great. So that was a wonderful opportunity. I would like to leave you guys today with just one thought spoken by one of my favorite environmentalists and role models, Rachel Carson. She said, "The more clearly we can focus our attention on the wonders of the universe, the less taste we shall have for its destruction." And I think that's been clear today by all our guest speakers who really have taken an interest in the ocean and really wanted to learn about it and share their knowledge and share what they're